This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 302, brought to you by the New York Comic Con. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 302, Hoedown. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Senior Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, it's just the cartoon.
Yeah. So we are from the website ifanboy.com, which is a website dedicated to the wonderful world of comic books and comic book culture. And every week we rush to our comic book store. We buy a big stack of comics. And this month it is truly a big stack of comics. And we read them. And then one of us has the duty each week to pick what he feels was the pick of the week, the book that he enjoyed the most, and write a review of it on ifanboy.com. Then we come back here to this podcast to talk about it, as well as all the other comic books in the world. Before we get to it and we hear what Connor's turn at the Pick of the Week rodeo this September, I want to warn you that we're going to talk about what happens in the book, so we're going to spoil them. So be warned. If you haven't read your comic books, you might want to press pause, come back, listen later, or just live dangerously and deal with the spoilers. This week, it was all Connor's. Connor's in the driver's seat. Connor's driving the bus. He's Batman.
I had a good week of comics. I didn't expect the second week of DC books to be as strong as the first, but I was really pleasantly surprised by many of them, books I had low expectations for. So I actually had a really tough time picking the pick of the week when I was all done. You may have noticed if you watched, it was out really late because I had a lot of books. It took me a long time to get through them all.
How many total did you have?
I had around, not as much as you. You had a lot, but I had 24, 25 around there.
I had 32 books this week.
Holy yeah. Lord.
Yeah. It was. This is like, seriously, DC, stop it. this is like, it's week two, and now I'm no longer excited, and I hate you.
Yeah. I'm kidding. It's really never felt so much like a duty.
Yeah, I know. Like
I'm enjoying every minute of it. I'm having a great time because the books are really good. So, but when I finished my stack, I thought about the books I had, and it came down to Demon Knights number one by Paul Cornell and Diogenes Nave. That's all really wrong.
Whatever. I was shocked. I was shocked when you told me.
I wasn't.
I was. I was.
Paul
and I are gonna, Paul. Ron and I are going to argue about this for a while.
Yeah, no, I was shocked.
I am over it.
Argument started. So Demon Knights number one is tied into Stormwatch, which we talked about last week. If you remember from Stormwatch, there was a throwaway little panel that featured the Demon Knights. So apparently they're the start of Stormwatch, or we'll find out how they're tied into them later on, assuming the book gets that far. But somehow it's tied into Paul Cornell's other DC book. And this is the most fun I had reading a book this week. There was a lot of great books. There was a bunch of books I gave 5 stars to, but in the end, this was the one I enjoyed the most and the one that made me want to read the second issue the most. And Stormwatch was okay. I didn't love it, but I really loved Demon Knights. I thought it was handled better in terms of here's the team. Here's a bunch of people you don't know, and they've come together. And this was not your traditional gather the team issue. This was a bunch of people are in a random town that's about to get hit hard by an army, and they're going to come together to fight this army. And it was funny. It was exciting. It was action-packed. The art was fantastic. There was dragons. This was a fantasy comic in the guise of a superhero book. And it took place in the Dark Ages, which we talked about Justice League. We talked about action comics. This is the third book that doesn't take place in the quote-unquote present of the DCU.
Oh, that's a good point. For some reason, I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it's interesting that they're playing with time like that, because most books take place in the present, whatever that is, and this is another one taking place in the past. And it features the Demon Etrigan and his other half, Jason Blood, and Madame Xanadu, and the Shining Knight, and Vandal Savage, and some other new characters I think are new because I've never heard of them. And I just had tons of fun with this. I mean, this is Paul Cornell, I thought, at the closest he's come to being the Captain Britain writer that he was. It was funny. It was action-packed. It had a big cast. It had goofy ideas that worked.
I think Excalibur is the main through line there.
Oh, yeah. There you go. There's the connection. Excalibur. Nice. Well done.
Yes, there you go. So for me, this was returning to that tone, that fun feel that Captain Britain had, and I enjoyed every moment of this issue. I was looking forward to it, but I really was happy after having read it that it was much better than I thought it was going to be.
Things that were great about this issue. John Borman type Merlin hat helmet.
Yes,
thing.
Yes.
You can't beat that. The Mordru villain, who just looked like every fantasy villain in my old comics ever, with that sort of the Evil Prince Valiant variant.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking
and
about?
The goatee-ish thing, yeah. Yeah.
The pointy beard, yeah.
Yeah, Demon Baby. Demon yep. Baby's good. I don't think I actually knew that this was a team book. I thought Demon, oh, it's Edrican on the front. That's what it's going to be. And I never even thought about it or looked it up after that. But I also liked, sort of not terrible Vandal Savage.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he's kind of a good guy to hang out with at this point.
He's kind of a lout. He's kind of a drunken, yeah. He's the big-time, loud personality warrior type.
I love the twist that Etrigan is really the one that is Xanadu is after.
Yep.
That's great.
Yep.
I got to deal with that guy. Oh, thank God you're back. Oh, my lips are smoking.
So how do you think this fares in a pre-Game of Thrones world? Like, how this came out a year ago, do you think?
I bet it's easier to pitch it.
You really think so?
Yeah.
Now it's easier to pitch it, you mean?
Yes, now. Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, fantasy doesn't do well despite what CrossGen might have thought, you know, back then.
Nice.
But it doesn't do well anymore in a comic in the mainstream comic world. But you've got a Game of Thrones, post Game of Thrones world where people are into that, and you've got a company in DC that's willing to do a lot more genre play.
Yep.
They're doing a lot, which sounds like a sex game.
It's, yeah. And both, do you see how fast Ron and I both were like, BBW.
I'm really into genre play.
And I think so far, if you look at the genre play books, they've been some of the best ones in terms of Animal Man and Swamp Thing and Demon Knights and some of the ones we'll talk about later on. But I like that they're playing with it. I like that they're giving them a chance. Will they survive? We'll see. But for now, they're really fun. And I think you could really tell how much fun Paul Cornell had writing a book that took place in the Dark Ages and features swords and dragons and things like that, and magic and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, good-looking book.
I had a ton of fun reading it. It was one of the, in my stack, one of the surprises, one of the ones that I didn't quite know what to make of it. You know, I thought throwing together a bunch of the, you know, like Etrigan and Xanadu and Vandal Savage and stuff like that and throwing them in the Dark Ages, I was like, oh, that seems a little, you know, I don't know what it seemed like, but it just seemed...
Seemed like a great idea that no one would have read 6 months ago.
Exactly. But this is, and it had, and you're right. It had that little Paul Cornell touch that makes it so much fun to read. I mean, like even the little, like when they go to the inn and they see they meet the Shiny Knight and the whispering, you know, just nod and smile, you know.
just one quiet pint. That's all I asked.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all
yeah.
I wanted.
Like a lot of the character interactions is what really I thought was the strength of this, and I thought the art was good. I thought this Neves guy is pretty good. So
ratings.
So if you didn't listen to last week, we're going through all 13 of the DC books this week, and we're going
buckle up.
We're going to rate them. We're going to rate them in the order Connor, Ron, Josh, and then we're going to say whether we're going to stick with them or not. Connor, Ron, Josh. Okay, we're tightening it up here.
So all right. Anal.
So ratings.
Ratings. I gave it a 5.
I gave it a 4.
I would give it a 4, leaning towards 4.5, but for the purposes of this 4.
All right.
We're sticking with it. Yes.
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 All right. So, Demon Knights gets the thumbs of approval, and boy, that made Paul Cornell happy. When I woke up this morning, I saw he was tweeting about it. I was like, oh, that's nice. It was, yeah. But anyway,
fantastic.
Yeah, probably one of the most anticipated books this week was Batwoman #1 from J.H. Williams III and W. Hayden Blackman. They've taken over where Greg Rucka and J.H. Williams left off.
Finally,
10 or 15 years ago. When did that book end?
I don't remember.
Jeez.
Now, I know when Ron and I read this together, Ron was very excited. And tell us what you thought, Ron.
Yeah, no, and the thing is that we really shouldn't be surprised by it. It's just a matter of like, because, you know, so we got that fantastic Greg Rucka, J.H. Williams detective run, which featured Batwoman, and we got a taste of it. It's, if you read that, this is going to be very, very, very familiar to you. But after all the starts and stops and announcements and never happening and issue zeros and all this sort of stuff, it was just like, amazing to actually be holding this in my hands and actually have it be happening and have it like be real. And I thought J.H. Williams just exceeded the expectations. Like, because one thing, we built it up so much. We built that detective run to like, oh, it was so amazing, and the layouts were amazing and the art. And in this issue, it's as almost as if he didn't miss a beat. It was like 2 years ago. Yeah, and
yep. Probably when he drew it.
Yeah, it's true. But almost to the point where I feel like he even did it better. He even outdid himself with this issue. What I thought was really interesting about this was, you know, so this is Batwoman in the DCU world of the world of Batman that hasn't changed that much. But we got a little glimpse of some old characters that J.H. Williams used to work on that we haven't seen in a while in the DCU. Like,
very exciting.
Agent Chase and the creepy skull head of the DEO, which was awesome. And it, for me, it all goes back to J.H. Williams, the combination of his layouts and his ability to switch styles. And I actually, the painted stuff is fantastic, but I love the Dave Mazzucchelli-esque cartooning when she's not Batwoman. Like, yes. That's the stuff that really sung for me. You know, so much so that I pulled it out. We featured the best of panels. I love the scene in the police department with the black and white, with that moment.
Like, well, in that moment, we also learned that Renee Montoya is dead in the new DCU.
Exactly.
Which is quite the shocker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't like this, did you, Josh?
No, I did. I don't think I loved it as much as it was like a chorus of huzzas from the internet about it. I think I It was pretty good. It was a lot better than I would have thought it would have been without Greg Rucka involved.
Yeah.
Because these are his characters. Those are his voices, and people don't tend to sound like him very much, you know. So it was pretty good. It was a lot better than I would have given it credit to. No one's going to agree with me. I felt a little bit like Ron, you said he was pushing himself to do more. I almost think like he was overdoing it.
Really?
I feel like every page was trying really hard to be, you know, fascinating and interesting to look at and dynamic and this thing. And I think I would have maybe liked to see him just pull back a little bit. Like, I know he can do it, but you don't have to on every page.
I don't know if he's trying hard. I think it's the way he draws.
Maybe, yeah. And maybe that's the case. Yeah. But it's definitely been amped up from the last time.
Well, it's also the first issue. You want to really get it, you know, with a bang.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was one of the best comic books I've seen in a long time. I thought it was fantastic. Without even hesitation.
He put us on a clinic. So ratings.
Ratings.
I gave this a 5 as well.
I gave it a 5.
4.
All right. Sticking with it?
Yes.
Very uncharacteristically, yes.
Yep.
Probably right. One of the only Bat books I'm sticking with.
Now, when they announced the new DC books, they announced Scott Lobdell on Superboy and Teen Titans.
Guys. Let's give it up for Scott Lobdell.
The surprise
of the
bunch.
This was awesome.
Yeah.
I'm halfway through it. I'm going, wait a minute. I believe I'm really enjoying it. I think I'm impressed by this.
this definitely was it sounds worse to say it, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
It
was good. Yeah.
Well, I just remember Wednesday morning just being like, I needed to tell people. I know. Go try Superboy. And everyone was like, no. And I was like, really? I'm not kidding. It sort of came from out of nowhere. I don't know what to expect. I didn't have any expectations. I thought it was strong. The dialogue was strong. The plotting was strong. If anything, like it was jam packed. If you look at the pages, they're just covered in letters.
That was the thing that when I first read it, when Connor and I were up at the DC office and I read it, my initial gut reaction was, wow, that was better than I thought it would be. But boy, is it wordy.
Well, it's the decompression. He was from the era before that, so he writes that in that era, and you get to really get your bang for your buck. This was it borrowed heavily in a good way. I think this is a good thing from the Young Justice cartoon characterization of Superboy, in that he was a test tube baby. He was raised in the test tube. He was birthed. He was educated. He doesn't know much about the outside world or how to deal with it. Yeah. And I think that's a smart move to go that way because a lot of people watch the cartoon, and that's trying to get them to read the books. So this was a fascinating and very different Superboy than you're used to in the comics.
Yep. I love the cover. I thought the art.
Covers.
I thought R.B. Silva did a great job on the art, I thought. And I kind of like the costume at the end of it. You know, like the red, basically red and black. It's very, you know, kind of borrows from what we recognize from the old Connor red logo and black t-shirt look from the olden days.
I think you need some Z Cavarici jeans and some pointy boots.
So it looks like both of these books, this and Teen Titans, will be crossing over as well, which makes sense. The rumor is the redhead is Caitlin from Danger Girls.
Gen 13.
Gen 13, no. I'm sorry.
Yeah, oh,
Gen
13. Really?
Fairchild.
Yes, Caitlin Fairchild.
Whoa.
That's the rumor.
Interesting. That'd be cool.
We'll find out if that's true or not.
But there really are a lot of words.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it when I was reading it. Like, I didn't feel it when I was reading it. I'm seeing it now looking through it.
Yeah. So, ratings.
Ratings. I believe I gave this a 4 or 5. I have to.
5 is crazy.
I was going to say 4.5.
Okay.
4. 4.
I gave it a 4.
Yeah, 4. 4 All is right.
Are you sticking with it?
Yes.
No.
Really?
Yeah, I can't be bothered.
Okay.
Josh? No, I understand. I totally understand.
Yeah.
Yes, but I could see myself going, okay, that's enough. Like, I could enjoy it for a little while, but not indefinitely.
Yeah, that was my whole thing. Like, I'm glad it was good. I'm a good on you, Scott Lobdell. Okay, fantastic. I don't need it in my world.
Yeah, I've got a couple of those.
Nothing against it. Not saying anything bad against it. So
I give it a 4 for sure. I think there's a lot of books that are like one or two more issues, depending on how good they are.
Let's be honest. I can't afford to buy 13 books from the Paul. I mean, it was funny because I was talking to somebody today, and we were talking about the quality of the books and what work. And after the conversation, I thought about it. I was like, well, before all this, I didn't buy every book DC put out anyway. Like I bought, you know.
You do get a little weird, like, yeah. Well, I guess I should. I guess I should help. I know, but no, yeah. Wait, no.
Wait a minute. No.
Well, it's funny because last week I had 10 of 13 as keepers, and this week I expected to have 3, but I had a lot more.
Yeah, well, we're going to go through that as well at the end. So, all right, so moving on. Batman and Robin, number one. Pete Tomasi, Patrick Gleason, Connor, how changed is the Batman world in Batman and Robin?
Well, not very much. That's the funny thing is that I find myself, before the DC relaunch, Batman books were probably the strongest books in DC. And now I find myself the least excited for them because they haven't changed as much.
Exactly, yeah.
So the other books, I'm excited to see what's new and different and fresh and interesting. And whereas these books are pretty much continuing on, they're not bad. I just don't find myself rushing to read them. Now, it'll probably change when Batman comes out because Scott Snyder did the best Batman book before. But for now, up until this point, I'm least excited about the Batman books. This was a solid Batman comic.
Yep.
There was nothing... You know, Patrick Gleason did a really good job. He's well suited for the characters. You know,
now, there was like an adjustment to Damian because I haven't been reading Batman and Robin, but I think before it seemed like he was off, and now it feels like they've reset him a little bit back in time. Like he was really disrespectful to everybody, even like I thought it was actually kind of too much that he was sort of such a dick about Bruce's parents. Like yeah. I just figured like he's got at least some respect for his elders coming from where he did, even though he's dicky to everybody else. But I don't know. Seemed a little weird to me. Just me?
No. I don't. We're gonna find out what Damien's like in this new world.
But yeah. Then
we said before that Tomasi's Damien was a little bit off.
Yeah.
Before.
But this is a different off. Like I, you know what I mean? Yeah. Which is fine. He can take it from however he wants from here. I don't really know. But if we're continuing forward, it felt like a little different.
Yeah. Although I did like him sleeping ramrod straight on the bed.
Yeah, with no covers. Or, yeah.
That seemed very appropriate. Fantastic. But it was a solid Batman book. It's just not as exciting. I hate the three little lines in this gist. Yeah.
I got to say, you know, Tomasi has not really excited me on anything. It's like, okay, it's good, but it's not.
Very yeoman.
Yes. Yeah. You know, capable. Craft is there. I actually thought Gleason did a really pretty good job, but I wasn't reading this before, you know.
Ratings.
Ratings. I gave it a 4.
I gave it a 3.
3.5.
Sticking with it?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
All right.
All right, then. Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, number one.
Jeff Lemire, Alberto Ponticelli. Jeff Lemire did last week's Animal Man.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
And Alberto Ponticelli, he was the artist on...
DMZ.
DMZ. No.
Well, he did an arc, but Unknown Soldier.
Unknown Soldier, correct. Oh, yeah.
Just right away, again, this is a sort of different side of Jeff Lemire, and everybody's talking about this is Hellboy in the DCU. I really want to focus on the most fucked up thing in this.
Which is?
The doctor turned himself into a little Japanese girl.
He didn't turn himself. It happens randomly. His body regenerates into a new one.
Okay. Well,
every decade, I randomly generate a new body to act as my host.
Yeah, so. I get it. Listen, the writer made the choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
this is not a criticism. I don't want it to sound like one.
I've really struggled with this because I thought this was really good. I really enjoyed reading it. I really enjoyed Ponticelli's art. I actually really like the style. I like it.
Fantastic.
Yeah, like the whole
thing. Also very un-DC Comics-esque.
Yes, very un-DC Comics. And I, you know, we talked about Frankenstein and the League of Monsters what is the group of monsters that he works with
Creature
called?
Creature Commandos.
Yeah, Creature Commandos. We talked about them during the Flashpoint thing, how it was very Hellboy BPRD-esque, and so I got that. But when I saw the little girl with a adult mind with a domino mask that looks like she walked right out of the Umbrella Academy. Mm. I went, like it's really derivative, but then there's the thing is like how many people read the Umbrella Academy? How many people are going to get that? You know, right.
I think isn't that image like that's got to be like a manga thing? She's in a little sailor suit,
possibly.
I think that's like maybe that's like a trope. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the first thing I thought of, I'm like, all right, Hellboy BPRD, Umbrella Academy, like, really, are we just taking all of Dark Horse, like, kind of ideas? But it was good. Like, it wasn't bad. That's the thing. I really like Frankenstein. I like his characterization of him. I think he's doing right by it. I think this could be a lot of fun. But it was just I just struggle with it. Anytime a book ends with a cellar full of children and an old woman holding a cross and damning people to hell, that's good for me.
for me, like, I like Frankenstein. I like the Creature Commandos, but I like them for a miniseries.
Yeah.
I don't see myself wanting to go. Like, I don't know if there's enough for me to do ongoing. For me to be excited about it, because I already read Hellboy.
Yeah,
I feel torn because I loved the art. I love Ray Palmer being a supporting character.
Yeah,
in this.
I noticed that.
I like the Frankenstein character, and I like the whole setup that it's very un DC comics like. But do I love it enough to keep going with it, especially with all the other books going on? I'm not sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, ratings.
I think I gave it a 4.
A 4.
Yeah.
3.5.
You're sticking with it.
Probably not, but I reserve the right to change my mind when I go.
It's game time decision.
Yeah.
All right. I'm a yes. I'll stick with it.
I'm gonna go with no.
All right then. Wow.
Josh is just taking a big axe to his DC pull list.
Yeah. Apparently
wasn't much to it to begin with.
Now Grifter number one. Grifter is written by Nathan Edmondson and drawn by Cafu.
Yep.
Nathan Edmondson writes Ron's favorite little miniseries.
I don't know about my favorite. It's one of my.
No, you kept saying it's the best thing.
You said it over and over and over.
Over and over.
Well, who's Jake That's Ellis?
Yes.
It, at the time, it was the best thing at Image, so yeah.
You read Jew?
We find out Grifter is also Sawyer from Lost.
Yeah, very much
that,
so.
That is one awful logo.
Yeah. The logos are rough here and there. Yeah, they really are.
Okay, they did all 52 in a day.
So this necessarily wasn't what I expected, but I liked it. I did it got me where I wanted to be with Grifter. Silence.
I was really looking forward to this, and I agree in the same way that it wasn't what I expected, I think.
Yep.
And I don't think that that's a bad thing. I just think it's not there yet.
Right. And that's the thing. And if you listen, did you listen to the Don't Miss conversation I had with Nathan? All right. Well, if you listen to the Don't Miss, he says that, you know, he's telling the story of how Grifter becomes Grifter.
And I'm totally cool with that. I love this character, and he's just not him yet.
Yeah.
And I can totally understand that.
Yeah.
It looked good. It was fine. We're going to talk about another book later, but I was like, really, DC, you're going to put out two Crazy Guy on a Plane sequences in the same week?
Yeah. But,
Oh. You might want to coordinate that.
Playing on our modern day fears of flight. Yeah,
exactly. I did like the Will Eisner-esque title, you know, within the book, the 17 minutes. I thought that was that was a nice little touch. I like Cafu a lot.
Cafu's good.
Yeah.
He's a solid storyteller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So ratings. I gave Grifter a 4, I think.
I gave it a 4.
I would have said 3.5.
All right. And sticking with it.
No.
Yes.
Yes.
Interesting.
I really like this character, so I'm looking forward to where it goes.
I just love the mask. It's really all about the mask.
No, I like that he's, I don't know, he's very Wolverine-like. He's very, very Wolverine-like, but he's almost...
With a little Hawkeye, too.
Yeah, a little less compassionate, a little Jonah Hex to him, really. Just, I'm interested to see where it goes, so we're sticking in.
All right.
In Deathstroke number one, Deathstroke falls victim to the disease of adding too many details to a costume that didn't need it.
That's for sure.
Deadshot has that happen to him later on in the stack of books. This was written by Kyle Higgins, drawn by Joe Bennett.
Where I did the who's draw? Oh, it's Joe Bennett.
I get a lot of these, the Joe Bennett, the Joe Benitez, and another guy mixed up. And I was like, oh, I don't mind this one.
Joe Bennett's too angular for me.
It's better than the other one. The one who does, I don't know, the
that one.
On the Red Lantern book.
See, the thing about Deathstroke is that I always thought the mask was like a cloth, like Deadpool kind of mask, not a flip up.
Yeah, here he's got the Wildcat, the Casey Jones-esque sort of hockey mask.
It's too much. This is all too much. Like, look at this.
Look
at that last page. Look at that last page with the belt and the shoulder pads and the gloves and everything. Oh, my God.
DC's bringing the 90s back.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed this more as I went along. I've always liked Deathstroke. I collected his – he had his own series in the 90s as well that I collected. I, for some reason, always have liked him as a character, and I thought this issue ended. I don't know about the giant sword, but it ended strong, I thought.
Maybe it's my DC versus Marvel bias, whatever, but this is not for me. I don't think that this is like giving, I'm going to put my foot in my mouth here, but I'm like, this is like giving Venom a series, even though Venom is really good right now. But, I just don't think that this is the kind of character that he's a villain. He's, and I think that this whole shtick is going to get old. So, this wasn't for me.
Since the guy's been reading The Punisher for who knows how long.
Yeah. I've never been like a Punisher guy. I read it when it's good. Yeah.
Like it's one step removed from Punisher, really.
Yeah.
Somebody compared this to Punisher Max, and I was like, that's about right.
Ratings.
Oh, I wanted to actually mention one thing. The one thing that I liked about it.
Josh, we're in the ratings segment now.
Well, you went too soon. You went too soon. On page 3, J. Jonah Jameson gets his head cut off. he just needs a mustache. That's him. The one thing I like, those characters, the teens in this, the whole time I was like, this is awful. I hate these. Why are they? And then they killed them. And I was like, oh, I see. I thought that was a nice twist because I was ready to pan it. I was like, I hate this. This is terrible. Oh, good. He killed them.
Yeah.
You hated them too, but you made me sit through that.
Quite brutally.
Yeah, that's totally cool. I like the panels of them being killed.
Ratings. I gave it a 4.
I gave it a 3.
3.
Stick with it?
Yes.
No.
No.
All right.
Green Lantern number 1.
Sinestro.
The other series of books that aren't really changing at all from the previous run of comics, which they probably needed to the most.
Yep.
On the other hand, this was fun.
This was I've been saying this has been the best Green Lantern book I've read in a while. And it's funny because I saw a lot of people kind of complaining about it online and some of the initial feedback I heard from some friends that they didn't really like it. I thought it was fantastic. You know why? Because it was just Hal Jordan and Sinestro, and it wasn't a million and one different lanterns and a million and one different storylines to keep track of. You just have the fact that now Sinestro is a Green Lantern and they don't know what to do with it, and Hal Jordan's back on Earth and is a sad sack with no money, which is fantastic.
That's what I thought was going to be the best, because it's the return of sad sack Hal Jordan.
Oh, it's
he's going to go live in on a park bench again.
I just hope he becomes a toy salesman or insurance salesman again.
No, some other new job.
Yes, exactly. What is like
a liquor distributor? Something.
He's going to do the work from home. The signs of the telephone poles.
Yes. It's a Ponzi scheme.
My favorite is he takes Carol out to dinner, and it's a nice, he's in a suit and it's all nice, and he builds up. He's like, Carol, I need to ask you something, and she's like, yes. And you think he's going to propose, and he asks her to co-sign a lease on a car.
Who paid for dinner?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Hal. This was fun and good because it was focused. As Ron said, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. There weren't a million characters in it. It was basically Hal and Sinestro, and Hal back on Earth. These are all the things I've wanted from Green Lantern for years, and I had tons of fun reading this.
And I just love the touch of realism that Hal's back in his apartment, and there's a stack of bills unpaid, and his rent's
over. Because he's been in space for 2 years.
Exactly, yeah. And his landlord is there, is like, pay me. And he's like, I've been out of town. Like how do you explain that?
Fuck, when you pay me.
Yeah, exactly.
So. I like Sinestro in the hallway. Yeah. I don't know. He's like, I've never seen him just standing in a hallway. Was he going to knock on the door when he got there?
Exactly. And I like Jordan. Carol just driving off, and all Hal can say is, but you drove me.
You're making me like it more.
Right? I know.
It was fantastic. What we learn is that Hal's going to go through quite an arc in the next 5 years.
Oh, I can't wait. All right. So
I enjoyed the hell out of this. Yeah.
Ratings.
4.
4.
4.
Sticking with it?
Yes.
Probably.
But it's got a real short leash because of the past history of Green Lantern.
Yes.
Yeah, I just can't shake it for some reason, Green Lantern. I just can't shake it. What I can shake is...
Red Lantern's number 1. Pete Milligan and Ed Benes, or Benet.
I'm not mad anymore. I have a baby egghead. Oh, look, it's a cat. I know. I'm over the cat.
Oh, the cat. I'll be honest with you. I'm all about the blood kitty, but that was a bit much.
I care not a lick for anybody in this book.
Yep, I'm right there
not
with you.
Not one.
And I like Peter Milligan, and I was kind of hoping he'd go wacky with it, but we didn't even get that.
Oh, this, to me, is the most unnecessary book of the entire relaunch.
Yep, yeah.
If you're trying to simplify and bring it back, you didn't need a Red Lanterns book. I feel like this is a book they had in place before, and then they had to bring it in because they had it.
Yeah. What I liked was the what I didn't understand was the flashbacks to Atrocitus before, like where we understand how Atrocitus came to be what he is. And how
so you can relate to him, I guess.
Well, no, but they show
the puncher.
They show the Manhunters, you know, ravaging his planet, and he's running around naked with a gun. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe that's how these aliens live. And then he gets to his wife and his kid, and they're all dressed. Just like, what kind of planet is this?
But don't work.
Yeah, so I don't know. It was just I agree with you, unnecessary, and just and it wasn't bad. I mean, it was fine. I mean, it looked fine. It looked fine. You know. I don't know. I didn't get engaged with it at all. So
ratings. I gave it a 2.
I gave it a 3.
Dose.
And sticking with it.
No.
All right then.
Is that the first all around?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. What are we agreeing to?
We're agreeing to not buy Red Lanterns.
Are we agreeing that Mr. Terrific number 1 was the most disappointing book?
Yes. Wow. Yes.
We all love Mr. Terrific from the previous incarnation in Justice Society. Great character, third smartest man on the planet, one of the leaders of the Justice Society, scientist.
Can I point out the 2 points that I thought that they lost me here? Unfortunately, what I know about London, I could fit in a 2-part episode of Doctor Who. T-Note by Jamal, season 5 on Blu-ray. That doesn't belong there. And then, let's see. Oh, here it is. Quote, actually, a simple thanks, black guy, for saving us from the homicidal lunatic wearing weaponized body armor will do.
Yep.
Okay.
And also, I don't know who Eric Wallace is, but I'm guessing he's not British because he wrote some of the most stereotypical British dialogue ever.
Well, we're not even going to mention what the atrocity that done the Power Girl.
Oh, my God. Wow!
What is she wearing in those
like she crashed with
gloves in L.A.
She crashed with them, and she's just wearing a basketball jersey.
She crashed with them,
and like, and you know, and it was just weird. It just the whole thing was just weird, and it was, and Gianluca Gugliotta was awful. All over the place. I mean, the thing that finally got me for it was the last page. Like when Michael Holt is standing over and says to kill you, Senator. Like what is that? He doesn't even look like.
I wasn't sure it was him.
Yeah, I know exactly. That's the problem.
I
all over the map. I
really wanted this to be a good book because yes. I really like this character, and I didn't. It didn't feel like the same character.
Yep.
No.
It's just the rudiments of him, and then none of that. I mean, I don't know when this is supposed to. I guess now.
Yeah. Now.
Now. So it's not like we're watching him from the beginning or whatever.
Right.
Yeah,
I don't know. It just had a lot of problems. Ratings.
Ratings. 2.
Sticking with it?
No.
All right. Now, I was absolutely perplexed by all the goodwill Suicide Squad was getting online because I thought it was the biggest pile of horseshit I ever read.
Fun.
Paul Grummy would agree with you.
Tons of fun.
Wow.
Josh, you explain.
I actually did have fun with it because, like, again, I had no expectations for this. And I just, like, I didn't really know, I didn't have any expectations for the characters, and they were just all in a room, and I was just watching how they would react and getting to know them in that way. I thought, there's a lot of talk about Harley Quinn being different or whatever, but as far as I can understand, her character was still kind of the same, and she'd been through a bunch of shit.
That's all. Yeah.
Looks more like the video game version.
Yeah. King Shark, actually. That was really meat. That was enough. I really had fun with it. I don't want
to. In the vein of the Dirty Dozen and other stories where you have bad guys come together to be good, this was a lot of fun. The characters were interesting. There's good characterizations. You found out how each one of them got on the team. Deadpool's horrific costume aside, I thought
a Deadshot.
Deadshot. Deadpool. Whatever.
Is there a need for Deathstroke and Deadshot? Deadshot.
No.
Because I get.
How does he see?
Through that little...
Just went through one. He's got 2 eyes, doesn't he?
He has no depth perception.
Yeah, it's just... Oh, my God. I don't know. It just similar to Deathstroke, it just didn't resonate with me at all on any level. And we're not even touching the Amanda Waller thing. I don't care about that.
I don't care about that.
Yeah, exactly. But
I enjoyed it, surprisingly. Yeah. I wasn't expecting... I had a whole plan in action to be not reading half his books come next month.
Blown. Ratings.
Ratings. 4.
1.
3.5.
Sticking with it?
For at least one more issue, yes.
No.
I thought it might make a really great one-shot. So I don't know.
They haven't actually had a story yet. They just had it.
Yeah, no, I know. Like, so for that, like, it's kind of okay. I don't know if I don't know. How, it's a game time decision.
All right.
Probably not, but I enjoyed it, if that makes sense.
So are you sticking with it?
Probably not, is what I just said.
Okay. So if we're talking about logos, I love the Resurrection Man logo, by the way.
Isn't it the old one?
It's the old original one, but it's very Saul Bassey.
I love the hand. Resurrection Man, the most pleasant surprise of the week.
Dan
Abnett, Andy Lanning, Fernando Dagnino. The story of a guy who dies and comes back with a new superpower every time he comes back. And I enjoyed the heck out of this
book. And the thing was is that this book came out in the 90s and nobody cared. And I really think it was a comic that like it almost like was the right idea at the wrong time. And now might be the right time.
Said everybody cares about everything DC's putting out right at this moment. Well, that'll continue in a few months. We'll find out. But this was another supernatural horror-esque title. Resurrection Man's souls being claimed by heaven and hell because he won't die. Yep. And he's been both good and bad. And I was not expecting to love this, and I loved it.
It was fantastic. I just love the precipice of the world that we're on with this character and where it might go and what can happen with it. Yeah, I thought it was great.
Really didn't like it. It wasn't that it was bad. I just didn't connect with it. I just felt like I was looking at art from a 90s Vertigo book, and I don't know. I wasn't into it.
Right,
I like the art a lot too.
I loved it.
Ratings. I gave Resurrection Man a 4.
I gave it a 4 as well.
3.
Sticking with it?
Yes.
Yes.
No.
All right.
3 is a little high for not liking it.
I don't think it was bad. I just really didn't connect with it. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
fair. No, that's fair. No, it's
not. Well, that's a good way to talk about the next book.
Well, oh, really? Because I think I have a different point of view on that.
Really? What is your point of view?
I could barely finish it.
I could barely finish it either. Reading Legion is like one of the I would much rather get a colonoscopy.
It was
this wasn't even just it was just this particular book. I think it was
maybe I don't know, but I was just like, when is this over?
I read the other Legion book, and I think it's the Legion. Well, first off, going back to the logos, so can ABC sue over this or? It's just the Lost logo, right? I mean, I'm not crazy. It's like the same.
No, part. they added the fuse elements.
Oh, I see. They added the flex and stuff. Yeah, yeah. I see. This was just the art was bad. The story was bad. This was just bad. It was just bad.
It was very confusing. I didn't hate the art. I thought the art was fun. It was, you know, the concept was interesting. It's Legionnaires from the future stuck on the present day Earth because their time bubble breaks. And that is, you know, that's interesting concept. Interesting setup. Very confusingly told.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad. Ratings.
Ratings. I think I gave Legion a 3.
I gave it a 2.
I'm sorry, I gave it a 2. I gave it a 2.
I gave it a 2.
2.
Sticking with it?
Oh.
Fuck no.
I barely could finish this one. Right. I'm not kidding. Like it took me a long time to read that
direct
book.
Direct your angry Legion letters to Josh and Ron.
Yes, so we are 26 books into the new... We're halfway through, boys. We're halfway there.
Oh, God. Reading 13 books in a row...
It's hard.
It is. It's just, and it's not that they're even bad. It's just like, oh, I just want to go do something else.
It's tiring. Tiring. But so, yeah. So there you have it. So going through our stick with it, don't stick with it. How many are you sticking with this week? How many are you not?
8 of 13.
I think I was 6 of 13.
5.
Confirmed I am 6. So
I'm 8. So that's
a total for 2 weeks. I am 12 out of the 52 I'm sticking with.
I am 21 out of... No, that's not right. That's wrong. I am 18 out of 26.
No, that's wrong too. You are
Connie,
screwed.
You're looking thin. I can't buy food.
18 out of 26.
Jeez.
That's actually not a bad plan.
Josh?
I don't know. I don't even remember what I said last week. I don't tend to keep track like that. Sorry. Right, was I supposed to?
Yes, you were.
Preparation is the key for this show.
It is.
You do a script. If it's not my week, I just show up.
All right. Well, so tune in next week.
Keep that in mind for the next 2 weeks.
And we'll review week 3 next week of the next 13 books. But we've got more comic books. But first.
Yes, we are brought to you today by the New York Comic Con. NYCC is coming on October 13th through the 16th. That's right. 4 days at the Javits Center in New York City. Tons of comic guests like Frank Miller, Jeff Johns, Frank Quitely, Jason Aaron, Robert Kirkman, Karen Gillan, Jim Lee, Mike Mignola, Scott Snyder. And many, many more. That's a lot of people. That's an impressive list, even just in a little bit. Media guests include people like Mark Hamill. He played Luke Skywalker. Rose McGowan, Kevin Smith, and Jason Mewes. They were Jay and Silent Bob. You can order tickets before September 18th, which when you listen to this will be right about when you're hearing it. And it's just $65 for a 3-day pass or $85 for a 4-day pass, which includes first dibs on show exclusive, first access to the show floor, and guaranteed entry to the kickoff concert on October 12th with DJ Z Trip. So go to NewYorkComicCon.com to buy tickets.
All right. So some other, once again, some other books came out this week. And honestly, like,
some big ones.
I know. Yeah. I know we talked about last week about how I felt last week was a really strong week, despite, you know, even beyond the DC stuff. This was like a comic book collector's dream this week. There were so many good books. So much interesting stuff was happening. But probably the most, aside from DC, the biggest news one was Ultimate Spider-Man number one.
Well, I haven't heard of that book.
No, nothing. Nothing.
This was fantastic. This
is a Chinese Spider-Man. What's going on in this book?
Miles Morales becomes, will become the new Spider-Man. And this was your introduction to him and his world. And I found every part of it fascinating. And the Sarah Pacelli art was to die for.
I gave this book a 5. I mean, this was as perfect of a comic book as you could expect. And it even had that sense of wonder that we had from Ultimate Spider-Man first started. Remember, like, the first couple issues came out, we're like, hey, this is really good. Like, it had that moment again, and it felt really exciting.
Great. Yeah, 5 stars. This is my pick of the week. I loved every bit of this. So you're not kidding about Sarah Pacelli and the little dot pitch that she put in different places throughout it, or a colorist, somebody, whoever did it. I liked it. I liked that Miles had a different power set. You know, something we didn't really know.
Invisible.
Expect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I even loved like when we saw when the somebody broke into his uncle breaks into Osborn's lab and the spider climbs in his bag, but he's got, like, is he the Prowler? Is he Deadpool? Like, what? Like I just, there were, like, still hints at the Marvel universe, but it was enough to still feel like it was something completely new and separate. Like, it was, and I thought it had echoes of Spider-Man, but wasn't trying to do exactly what Spider-Man was, and that there's an uncle involved, and
Because every other comic book we read, we pretty much know exactly what's going to happen, and I don't know anything about this, and I love the expectations of it. Yeah. We just don't know.
Yep. So talk about fun. It was just great. So 5 stars. Good job. Bravo. And it's almost like you feel bad because, like, with all the DC stuff, it's like,
drowned out.
Yeah, totally drowned out.
I think he's going to be doing fine.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine too. Good stuff.
Speaking of 5 stars, Criminal: The Last of the Innocent number 4 ended its short 4-run. I thought it was perfectly length. There was no filler, no fat to cut. It was a quick and dirty story. And in this issue, Archie outwits Encyclopedia Brown and teams up with Richie Rich to bring down Mr. Lodge. And I thought it ended really well in a way that people really expected that Riley Richards was going to get it. Something bad was going to happen to him. But really what happened was something worse happened, which is that he had to kill his best friend in order to keep his story and his cover and his freedom. So it wasn't like he got found out and sent to jail. No, worse than that was he killed his friend and now he lives in a delusional world where he has slowly become the cartoon character that he remembers.
Yeah, and we said it when it started and it totally ended up being this is the best criminal story arc of the whole run. And I love that there was a little tie back to all the other stories. You see Teague Lawless, which is cool. But it didn't detract from the story. It wrapped up the crime itself, and all the players played their pieces, and the story went through, and a couple of twists and turns, stuff I didn't expect, and I love this, loved it. So
the best criminal arc, I think,
hands down.
Very wonderful. Good. Speaking of very good, another 5-star book, Scalp 52, and I you can tell things are
coming
up
to a head,
and it's so flippin' satisfying. I mean, it really is. And I gotta say, I gotta wonder. At one point, Red Crow says, "Where the fuck is Shunka?" And I was like, "You don't want to know, bitch."
This the cliffhanger of the week. This is the one where I most was like, "Oh shit."
Yeah,
which maybe Red Crow has been shot, or maybe by his once loyal bodyguard, or maybe not. We'll find out next month. But
Dash doesn't have a line in the whole thing because he's been shot through the mouth.
His jaw's been wired shut. But he was very funny in I love the scene with him and Nitz, where Nitz couldn't figure out what the fuck he was saying, mean to say. Just fine.
That's cartooning.
Yeah,
I mean, like that's so good. Like the comic book sort of storytelling of it is totally impressive. Just oh man,
so we have about. eight issues left, and we can tell. And that's a lot of issues left. So
we got the origin and the nunchucks. I don't want to leave that out.
Yeah. So
they return from the first issue.
Hey, he used them to a very satisfying effect in this issue. So
fucking
there you go.
Fucking shocker. Nope.
Number 52. Excellent.
Really, really very excellent.
So New Avengers number 16 was, there's a lot of hubbub made about it because it was the Daredevil joins the Avengers story as Bendis and Mike Diodato tell it. And I gotta admit, like, I think of all the Fear Itself crap that's been going on, Bendis has done the best with it because he's told these little side stories that's yes. happened in the setting of Fear Itself. But, you know, and this one got me a little choked up, I'll be honest with you, because it was just like so... It was just Daredevil being Daredevil. Like, he doesn't know what's going on. All he knows is that someone's attacking his city, so he fights some Nazi robots, he kicks some ass, he shoots a machine gun, and then his thought is, oh shit, is anyone looking after Luke's baby?
Yeah.
Like, and it was such an angle that I would never have thought of, and by the end of it, I was like, oh my, Matt's awesome.
There were two great things about this issue. One, you can really, first of all, it's great to have Bendis writing Daredevil again.
Yes, yeah.
You can really tell that he loves the character, as evidenced by the strut when he blows open the wall of the yep. Avengers Mansion and struts in three or four panels in a very badass way. And that was awesome. That was to me the moment where I was like, he loves Daredevil.
Yep.
And he's made Daredevil a super badass. And it was fun. I mean, the joke is that last one who hasn't been joining the Avengers, please shut the lights off. But,
yeah,
you know, it's... So what? It's
who cares?
It'll be interesting.
And I really like the way he framed it with, you know, the talk about what makes an Avenger and Hawkeye making the point going, yeah, you know, do the Avengers deserve Daredevil? Well, no, like, does Daredevil deserve the Avengers? But really, do the Avengers deserve Daredevil? Which took it to a different level. And I also thought it fits in with what's going on in the Daredevil title with Wade. It, you know, tied. Mm-hmm. He even said when at the end when Luke and Jessica give him his membership card, he's like, but Cap doesn't like what I'm doing, and Cap, you know, yeah. like it, you know, so it was a reference to what's going on. It fits in the Marvel universe. It was just this really surprised me how much I liked this issue.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Awesome. I assume you guys didn't keep reading 27.
I did.
No,
I didn't.
I dropped off.
Of course, yeah.
I know that, like, one of the things that you guys, and me to a lesser extent, not so much into the supernatural part of the whole thing, but the first issue of the second set came out, or second series, they're couching it in musical terms, came out, and I really liked it. I thought it was smaller, and it focused on the idea of having been a former, you know, famous musician and having to reinvent yourself. I love musician stories, and I thought that there were a couple of really nice personal moments in this where the character, like, he really knew the character, and it was I thought it was an improvement. It was better.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it.
So. I liked the turnaround in the club a lot by the band, who basically sold him out completely.
Yeah.
It's a fun issue. Yep. Damn sizing, though.
Yeah, I know. Why?
The Unwritten number 29, I don't know if we talk about this all that much, but the last cover on the last one was like a Joe Simon, Jack Kirby superhero comic, and this one was like a crime romance book.
Great covers they've
great
had.
Cover. Oh, yeah. Beautiful. I've really enjoyed this little story that's sort of been in the past about this woman who's a cartoonist and she's famous, but she's using her next door neighbor's name because women wouldn't have been able to do cartoonists. And you're just starting to understand, instead of the main character, Tommy, completely denying everything and not being like, he's into it now. He's got control of what's going on, and like, things are moving forward, and it's gained a little momentum. And I think for a while there wasn't a lot to talk about with it, but it's like coalescing. It's becoming clear, you know, 30 issues in, but this is actually a really fun issue, and so was the one before it.
Cool. Talk about fun. Buffy season 9, I want to say episode 1, but issue number 1 was a blast, and it really is because Joss Whedon wrote it. Like, there's something about these characters that sing when Whedon is putting words in their mouths, and this picks up where the last season 8 left off. They're all in San Francisco, and they're trying to get back to a world. They're trying to get back to a life without magic, and this whole issue was centered around a party that Buffy threw at her apartment and woke up the next morning hungover, can't remember what happened, and so the story is interspersed with moments from the party, and there were just laugh out loud moments. They were great. Like, I can hear the characters talking as I'm reading it. I thought George Jonty, he kind of, his style is a little rougher than it was in the last go around, but I actually liked it, and you know, it's just more Buffy goodness. It was a good start for the season 9, so I liked it.
I cut my ties.
You did? It was good.
I made it through the 5-year season 8, and that's enough for me.
Yeah, it was fun. I
don't need to be almost 40 by the time.
It's one of those Winterfell season.
It was really, yeah, it was really kind of exactly. funny. It was really kind of funny because when I was reading it, I realized how much I've missed it since season 8 ended. Even though we joked about it dragging on all stuff like that, I was like, oh, I missed these comics. So I'm glad that it's back.
Season 9 is coming.
Yes. So, okay, so those are all the comics that we enjoyed this week. Go to ifanboy.com/comics, and you can see all the comics that came out, and you can do your pull list and rate and review them and things like that. And you can also deem what book is your pick of the week, and we're going to go through the top 5 picks of the week from the iFanboy community, and number 5 is Criminal, The Last of the Innocent. Number 4, 6.4% of you thought it was your pick of the week, and I'm hard-pressed to disagree with you. Number 4 was Uncanny X-Force, number 15, at 7.5%, which we didn't talk about, what was still awesome.
That comes out every week.
It's like a weekly. It's amazing. But this one, Remender got heady with this one. It was crazy.
Yeah, starting to lose me.
I loved it. Oh, it was great. I loved every minute of it. Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 1 was the number 3 pick of the week, and that was 16.1%. The number 2 pick of the week was Connor's pick of the week, the iFanboy pick of the week, Demon Knights number 1 with 19.8%. And the number 1 pick of the week across the iFanboy community at the time of recording was Batwoman number 1 with 30.4%. People love the Batwoman.
I like that they get spread out a lot.
Yeah.
I like the people who try new things. That's good.
And the community reviews on iFanboy amongst the users have exploded, which is awesome to see so many people writing so many great reviews. And they don't always write about good books either, though, which is cool.
I would gladly read this one.
Sure, go for it.
Retcon on Fear Itself number 6 gave the story a 1 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And the pick of the week percentage, someone picked it, was 0.2%. And he says, Fraction's Captain America comes off like a cross between Toby Keith and a WWE wrestler. A cacophony of gun-toting bluster and empty threats. Odin continues his role as the official pincushion of the Avengers Big Three in this issue as Cap takes his turn screaming at the Allfather. Meanwhile, the other heroes stand around looking equal parts angst-ridden and bored, except for Thor, who looks like he needs some warm milk and a nap. Who can blame him? This book is so wooden and devoid of life that I'd have dropped it after the first couple of issues if not for the gorgeous art of Stuart Immonen.
This was the issue where I finished it, and I echoed Josh from a couple of issues ago where I'm like, well, this is horseshit.
I dropped it. I dropped this. Would be the first event I've dropped since before Civil War.
This was my big problem with this is I read this, and I was IMing my friend when I finished it, and I was like, I don't know who these people are, but they're not Spider-Man or Captain America.
Yeah.
The characterization is so far off. It's like, it's amazing. So
I dropped after that other one, and I was like, is this still going on?
Yeah, it can't be over soon enough.
Like, this person who hated it, you're still buying it for art? Yeah. Just stop. Just stop now. You don't have to finish. No one said you had to finish.
Not good.
Especially since they added 3 issues to the end of it, so it's really a 9-part series.
It's ridiculous.
Or a 10-part series? 10-part series.
I just want it to be over. All right, our next review comes from Cabernet Franc.
Good work. Look at you.
Yeah, how about that?
It was really good.
Who reviewed Optic Nerve number 12 and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and 0.8% of you made it your pick of the week. And Cabernet Franc says, the angst and misanthropy, there goes any goodwill I just had in pronouncing, the angst and
misanthropy.
Misanthropy that pervades his earlier work is not present in these stories, which I found relieving. Adrian Tomine continues to demonstrate his keen eye for humanity with excellent character studies, but these two are funnier and seem less mean-spirited. Gorgeous art as usual. And that sums it up great. He takes a page from, I think, Dan Klaus' book. So Optic Nerve had 2 stories in it. They weren't autobiographical. The first story was a almost like a newspaper strip-esque format, and there was a series of 4-panel comic strips, and then every 6 gave us a full page, full color one. So it's almost like you're reading like a week worth of the comics, and there's the Sunday comic. Mm-hmm. And it was about a guy who's trying to make sculpture out of plants, and it was hysterical, and it was very, very biting on society. It was all right, but the second story, Amber Sweet, was just amazing—a full-color story about a girl who looks just like a porn star and how it ruins her life. And it was just that Adrian Tomine touch of reality and ability to tell, you know, like slice of life stories, and it was fantastic.
I gotta say that Cabernet Franc description of it really strikes a chord, because that was the thing. Like, I could totally respect the guy. I love the way his artwork looks, but I'd read it and I just like, well, I feel terrible.
Yeah. No. This didn't have that feeling at all.
Wow. So, that's really cool.
I'd say pick it up.
Maybe marriage has changed him.
Yeah, I think it really has. And it's funny because actually after the letters column, there's there's a series. There's two pages of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 line strips, like filled two pages flat of the autobiographical stuff. And it's him talking to people about like, oh, what are you going to do next? And him going, oh, I guess I'll just do another issue. And it, this is the autobiographical stuff. And it reminded me of that wedding book. And I think Getting Married has changed him, and he's getting older, and it's a little bit different now. And it's interesting to see him evolve in his comics. So, yeah.
See, I would pick that up.
Yeah.
You know, if I knew he was, if he was more towards, you know, less miserable and more towards interesting, I'd probably
honestly, I would say go pick it up. It's really interesting. It's really good.
Can. Some can.
Yeah.
You know, he's got fans of it around for like, oh, he's totally sold out. No, no, he just grew up some or changed. It's always
happy.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I thought about it. I saw it at the store, but I didn't grab it.
Oh, you should grab it. Let's go back.
Because I had a billion books.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's a good reason not to also.
It's totally worth it, though. So, yeah, so go to ifanboy.com/comics where you can write your own reviews and do your own pick of the week. Every week, we love to know what you think.
And we're not done.
No, we're not.
No, we're not. We have to talk about the book of the month, and we're not going to do it for long because it's our...
Connor, get on with it.
Green River Killer, A True Detective Story, was the book of the month. It's from Dark Horse Comics, written by Jeff Jensen, who writes for Entertainment Weekly, and drawn by Jonathan Case. And the Green River Killer, if you don't know, was a serial killer in the Seattle area for many years, who was convicted of murdering 47 women. He confessed to murdering over 70. They think he murdered over 100.
Jesus.
And it's not so much a thriller. It's not about finding out who the killer is. You find it out pretty quickly. In fact, you even meet him as a teenager in the first scene, which is really creepy and chilling. But it's more about the toll that the investigation takes on the lead detective, who was Jeff Jensen's father. So it's a story about his dad, really. And he even talks about in the afterword about how he wrote the book to understand his dad better. And it really is a fascinating look at a decades-long serial killer investigation and what that does to you. And just lots of interesting things. And it's not so much scary as it is very uncomfortable, especially the scenes with Gary Ridgway, who was the Green River Killer. He is a bizarre, he is almost a textbook serial killer, sort of very awkward and weird, but also capable of being really nice and charming, but also capable of having just being devoid of emotion and feelings and empathy. And it's very interesting because for a while he lives in the police station. They had to secretly question him, so they took one of the offices and they converted it into a sort of a makeshift cell and had him live in it for a while they were interrogating him. So he's like sitting there eating breakfast and they can see him through the doors. Hey, Bill. And it's just creepy. It's a really creepy book. If you find this kind of serial killer story or sort of abnormal psychology of a, you know, thing interesting, it's a very interesting. And it's also, the art is fantastic. It sort of looks like early Somni work. Very shadow heavy. It's a black and white book.
Well, it almost reminded me, like, I was flipping through it at the store after you wrote the review. I was like, oh yes, I want this. And I was flipping through it, and it's almost like it reminds me back when we first discovered Torso by Bendis.
Yes.
Like, it had a very Torso feel.
Yeah. What's, it's
how big is the book?
Is it a big
book?
Yeah, it's an OGN. It's 200 plus pages.
Okay.
It's I couldn't tell you exactly. It's 234 pages.
Is it straight up narrative, like, you know, beginning, middle, and end, or is it have like, because I know that he did research and stuff for it, so are there parts that aren't sort of straight up story?
Well, it's hard. It's not a traditional narrative because it's about a decades long investigation. It opens with a attempted murder that Ridgway tried to commit when he was a teenager, and it opens with meeting the detective when he's in college and tracing his life through to become a detective, and then he catches the case that becomes the serial killer task force investigation, and then that leads through the years to finally catching him and then interrogating him, getting him to admit his, and then finding the bodies. I mean, it's a complete story, but it's a long story, so it's not your traditional sort of
and it's all a true story. I mean,
yes,
true
absolutely. Story. Cool. And it's very, you can tell there's lots of very true details that feel true because obviously his dad was there, so he was able to get lots of, you know, sort of very specific sort of details about people and things. And if you enjoy that kind of story, it's wonderful. It's really creepy.
I was sold by the solicit. So
yeah, it's if you enjoy those Vertigo crime books, this is a better version of those books. It even kind of looks like it in the way the art is. It's very similar. But
yeah, I'm definitely adding it to my list. I definitely want to check it out.
Dark Horse, OGN. I'm really happy that people are still putting out these high quality OGNs.
Yeah, I feel like it's an important sector that has to, you know, that should be out there. Yep. So I'm glad to see that come out. And the true crime stuff, I mean, I know that's one of the genres that the three of us eat up, you know, like with a spoon, like we love it. So yeah, I can't.
I think it's interesting, Ron, but you don't really like fictional crime, but you like true crime.
Yeah, I like historical stuff.
I can see that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like Zodiac, I love that movie.
I like true crime better than fictional crime. I know that.
Yeah, me too. So cool. Yeah, well, it's definitely on my to read list. I can't wait. So.
Check it out, Dark Horse Comics.
Yeah, cool. All right.
Skipping the emails, skipping the voicemails because we're long because it's DC month.
It is long and tiring month. Yeah, so we'll get back to your emails and voicemails probably in October. But yeah, so keep on writing in at contact@ifanboy.com and email us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-6697.
Maybe on a light week we'll do like an email dump.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe we'll just do a whole episode of emails, no comics at all. Oh. No, why would we do that? I don't know.
That's a horrible idea.
Yeah. Anyway, so we also have another podcast called iFanboy Don't Miss, which comes out every Monday, ostensibly, and it's where we talk to a creator about one comic coming out that you definitely don't want to miss. In the past 2 weeks, we talked to Nathan Edmondson about Grifter, and before that, we talked to Jeff Lemire about Animal Man. So this coming Monday, we are not talking about a DC book.
Scandal.
It was hard.
Yeah, it was very
hard. They're everywhere.
No, but actually one of the books that I'm – one of the new number one first issues of a series that I'm very excited about that I really want everyone to check out, a book called Near Death, Near Death number one, coming from Image Comics, written by Jay Ferber, drawn by an Italian guy whose name I cannot pronounce, and neither could Jay. When you listen to the interview, you'll hear. But speaking of crime stories, if you like crime, you're going to definitely want to check out Near Death. So listen to iFanboy Don't Miss to hear all about it.
This is a departure for Ferber.
Yeah, and he nailed it. What's great about it is that it's not noir. It reads like an 80s crime action TV show.
Like Magnum.
Yes, yeah. So
awesome.
So yeah, awesome. So definitely tune into iFanboy Don't Miss. You can catch that on iFanboy.com on Mondays, or you can subscribe to it on iTunes, iFanboy Don't Miss. Subscribe today.
iFanboy.com is, of course, where you can find all of that stuff. You can find Connor's Pick of the Week review. You can find the Book of the Month review that we just talked about. And lots of talk about the all the new DC titles, among many other things. But if you haven't been by, you can sort of see. It's interesting right now because people are pulling their new books and more people are leaving reviews and stuff like that. And we were tallying up the numbers and looking at sort of what's been the big surprises and the ones that were disappointing and all sorts of stuff. So keep your eyes on that. And then all the other stuff, there is other stuff going on in comics. And we are
actually, let's not gloss over that. If you don't go to iFanboy regularly, what we're doing this whole month is we're tallying the stats on these new DC books, pulls, reviews, ratings. So if you don't go there normally and pull and review and rate, go there and do that so we can see what's up and what people think of the DC books. Even if you just pull and rate, you don't have to review if you don't want to. But
and the thing is that even if you hear this and you kind of go, oh, whatever, like, just so you know, like the creators and publishers, they're looking at what you're pulling and rating. And we, you know, and so like you have a direct opportunity to give direct feedback to the people making these comics of which ones you like and you don't like.
And so, all, you know, and also like when you have hundreds of people rating a book, that rating tends to be pretty spot on.
Yep. Yep.
And that's one of the really interesting things. So you can go to there and you can find all sorts of links to us on Twitter, Facebook, all things like that. And you can go to twitter.com/iFanboy if you want to follow us, or facebook.com/iFanboy. You can also find the video show there. Last week we talked about All Ages Comics, which is Connor's funniest performance ever.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
It was an entertaining edit. I'll give you that. and then next week, the ladies.
Wow, just invalidated the entire show, right?
Yeah, there you go.
One phrasing. Oh, email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Call us at 888-FANBOY 326-2697. Questions, comments, concerns. And Ron's going to do an all email show on his own.
Maybe I will.
Call her in from Poughkeepsie.
And if I do, you can then go to iTunes and write a glowing review of that episode, or just write a review of iFanboy in general, write a review of iFanboy Don't Miss, write a review of Tom vs. Aquaman, of Word Balloon, of 11 O'Clock, of all the other great podcasts out there, even podcasts not even about comics, like Mike and Tommy Snacks. Just write reviews on iTunes. It helps people discover new shows, helps get the word out, and also help us get the word out by telling your comic book store, tell your buddies who read comics, the message board you're on that's not iFanboy.com, tell them to go to iFanboy.com and check all the things out. We really are here because a lot of you have helped get the word out. We really appreciate it, and don't stop now. We can't stop the momentum together. The iFanboy Joe-mentum.
Oh, no.
What?
No, we're not. Don't associate us with Joe-mentum.
I'm sorry.
What?
Oh.
Sometimes I don't know where it comes from. I'm really tired. All right, so 26 books in the can in DC. We've only got 26 more to go. So tune in next week when we dive into week 3 of the New 52, as well as all the other books come out. I really hope I don't have another 30 plus week.
Whose week is it?
Josh. Hey. Yep.
Ooh, Josh's.
Yep. Interesting. Ooh. It's Batman. Scott Snyder Batman week.
Ooh.
Batman. Justice League Dark next week.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Next week actually is a good week. Next week is
like that. Well, there's been something interesting each week.
Yeah.
Yes, there has.
But that's 3 in a row for DC. By the way,
I'll give you. So I read next week's books already, and I will give you. There was a book that did not live up to my expectations, and there was a book that exceeded my expectations.
And they were the same book. Think so, about that, kid.
Chew on that.
Oh my god.
So, until next
week. Oh my god.
Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
What happened?
We'll see you next week.